Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back on a Monday night part two edition of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm now joined by Zachary Rosenblatt. It's a fun name to say. It's one of those names that I've enjoyed saying out loud in practice for this very podcast. Zach, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Chase.
On average, how many times do you have to correct people on the Zachary spelling? Like, how many times? I had a friend who had the Z-A-C-K.
People spell it Z-A-C-H, like, probably 90% of the time. It's always wrong. Yeah.
Do you ever tell your mom, what were you doing? What happened?
Yeah. People always ask that. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's at the point. I try not to correct people too often because you don't want to, you know, seem like a D, I guess. I can't think of a nicer way to say it, but people are always spelling it wrong. It's a freak. Even people that I've been friends with for a long time spell it wrong.
Yeah, it happens. But ultimately, the good thing is that it's still Zach. Either way, it's still Zach.
Exactly. So
the pronunciation's all that matters. You cover the New York Football Giants, and I have a lot of questions about this Giants team coming into this year because they're starting to get a lot of buzz. They're starting to get, based on like how last season went, I think it probably exceeded a lot of the just people who were not covering the team every day or watching the Giants every day, like what their expectations were last year. And we looked at it and it seemed like they overachieved. And I think maybe for me, my expectations of the Joe Judge, Jason Garrett, Dave Gettleman situation was like, I don't know. Are we going to just lose sight of things because they're in the NFC East and that will kind of cloud some things? But as it stands right now, like, do you think, barring injuries, and that's going to be part of it, but it's June 14th, if a Giants fan writes you an email and saying, like, why should the Giants not be favored or be considered the favorites to win the NFC East, what do you say to them?
Well, it really, the fate of their season comes down to two things, and they're pretty connected, and one of them is Daniel Jones. He has to be a lot better than he has been the first 2 years. He only threw 11 touchdowns in 14 games last year, which is kind of hard to do when you start every game and this is a passing league and they only had 11 touchdown passes from him. So that needs to be, I mean, there were a lot of factors in that. And the second part of that is one of the factors, the offensive line. It was by many metrics, either the worst or one of the worst offensive lines last year. And they're pretty much running it back with the same guys as last year. They cut Kevin Zeitler, who was arguably their best lineman, to save money to go and make all these other moves they made. So they're pretty much relying on, you know, they hired a new coaching staff on the offensive line, a bunch of guys, and they're pretty much relying on development of these young guys becoming good. And, you know, it's a risk. When the offensive line is bad, the offense just doesn't work. And the Giants fans know that better than anybody because their offensive line hasn't been good probably since they won the Super Bowl 10 years ago now, which is crazy. But, yeah, I think it comes down to Daniel Jones, the offensive. I mean, obviously, they have a lot of guys who have some injury history on other spots. but I think they're more loaded up in terms of talent at most positions. Maybe there's some on defense where they could do better, but they have a creative defensive coordinator, so you feel okay about it. Their secondary is loaded. The defensive line has some talent. They don't have a great pass rushing group, but they can survive with it. So it really does come down to the offensive line, you know, outperforming what it did last year, and Daniel Jones taking the leap that the organization has been acting like they believe he can take.
Andrew Thomas is kind of like a linchpin for them, right? Like, he kind of came on down the stretch last year, but he was just seemed like a slam dunk coming into the draft, and he was lost and was getting bad PFF grade after bad PFF grade. Do you think like things are going to be pretty okay there with Andrew Thomas? Is he going to be a long-term answer at his spot, or do you think there are still question marks with this coaching staff about where Thomas is in his development, if he can be the guy that they drafted him to be?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because if you look at the draft, he was viewed as like the sure thing.
Yes.
And so they drafted him again over all these other guys who wound up being stars as rookies. So that picked him. Like, I mean, it made sense at the time. Maybe, like, I think there was a lot of people who might have argued they should have picked a guy like Becton or something, but they liked that, you know, Andrew Thomas was a little, it seemed like he was more pro ready. So they picked him. And then, you know, Becton goes and is great. Tristan Wirfs is playing like an all pro. And Dredrick Wills was okay. And so Andrew Thomas, like you said, he was just awful the first, like, 10 games of the year. I think he gave up the most sacks of any offensive lineman. And then he did play a lot better down the stretch and gave them a lot more. I think they really do believe in him as, like, a, you know, a linchpin of that offensive line. He simply can't be as bad as he was last year if he does. And, you know, I mean, he's probably arguably one of their top 3 to 5 most important players, probably top 3. Because if he doesn't pan out, then everything's kind of a mess. They have question marks at all the other offensive line spots, you could argue. He, in theory, he's the guy that they look at as, okay, we're good with Andrew Thomas at left tackle. We need to figure out where we are, you know, left guard, right tackle, and they like their center too. But so, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big thing. I think he can. I think he has the talent. I think he showed a lot of it at the end of the year. It's people forget. I mean, it's because those offensive linemen played so well. Like last year, there was a weird offseason. They didn't have OTAs or mini camp. They didn't have a preseason. So he kind of got thrown into the fire. And offensive line, everybody always says it's the hardest position to transition to in the NFL. So having a full offseason under his belt, he is a little banged up right now. He should be healthy for training camp. He should be good to go. But if he's not, then there's going to be a big problem.
Joe Judge, year one. What did he get right and what did he get wrong in your estimation?
I think, you know, it's. I've talked about this a bunch. Like, they were 1-7, and I've never seen a coach have as high of approval rating as he did. Mm-hmm. And that, like, the New York just absolutely loves him. And, you know, I think most of the blame was falling on, like, Jason Garrett last year when they were struggling, which is fair or not. He is the head coach. So, I mean, Joe Judge is the head coach, so I don't know. But, yeah, you know, what I think he accomplished more than anything was he got his team playing hard till the very end. You know, he got a lot of flack for his training camp methods, but at the end of the year, they clearly had better stamina than the teams they were playing at the end of the games. And the players have pointed this out. They're like, we didn't feel tired. And you can kind of see the other guys kind of getting a little tired. So, like, his training camp methods kind of pay off in the long run. You know, I think he still has a lot to prove. I think the hype has probably gotten a little too extreme in New York. I think he still has a lot. He still needs to show that he can, you know, that he has the talent. Like, last year, they didn't have the talent, and he got them to 6 wins and nearly making the playoffs, which it's kind of a misnomer because of the division they were in, but they did almost make it. They were a game away, 6-10, you know, it was an improvement from the previous year. So, I mean, if they take the next step, then he deserves a lot of credit, but if they don't, then he also deserves some of the blame.
Interesting. Is there something to, I guess, maybe to watch for with the Freddie Kitchens, Jason Garrett offensive stuff this summer? Is that something fans should monitor?
I think it's worth keeping an eye on because I think what you have there is, you know, Jason Garrett in theory is on, I mean, I would hope he's on the hot seat after they had second worst scoring offense in the league last year. They averaged 17.5 points a game, which is inexcusable considering, you know, they invested all this stuff in their offensive play. I know they lost Saquon Barkley, but your offense can't fall apart when you lose a running back. And so, you know, Jason Garrett is on the hot seat. You know, he missed a game because of COVID, and then Freddie Kitchens came in and they took more shots down the field, which they had it with Jason. And they have the personnel to take shots down the field this year. Maybe he didn't believe they did last year. And so I think if, you know, it's interesting because you in theory have the replacement for Jason Garrett on the staff already. And, you know, I think Jason knows that Freddie Kitchens got promoted to a different role. I think he's been more heavily involved in the game plan. each week, and I think he's going to be heavily, his hands are going to be in more areas than when he just coached tight end last year. And so I wonder if that's kind of something Jason's thinking about. I know he wants to be a head coach again, but you know, if the offense is better, this team is going to be good, and Jason Garrett's going to be fine, and Freddie Kitchens is going to be fine, and maybe Jason Garrett gets a job somewhere else. But that is something to keep an eye on. I'm going to be keeping an eye on how it looks in training camp, like how involved Freddie Kitchens is around the offense.
How important is this year going to be for Daniel Jones? And does he know? Does the coaching staff know? Does Gettleman know? Is there just a lot of pressure within the organization on just what Daniel Jones is this year?
I mean, I think even if they all won't admit it, I think they do know. They understand the pressure that's on him. They went on a spending spree, and the owner has come out and said, like, I'm tired of losing. I mean, he said that a lot over the years. But, he's tired of losing, and you know, they invested in all these, you know, they got Saquon Barkley second overall. They spent this money on Kenny Golladay. They signed Kyle Rudolph. They drafted all these offensive linemen early. They drafted Kadarius Toney in the first round. So they've brought all these pieces in around Daniel Jones. If he doesn't accomplish it, you know, they have an extra first round pick next year from the Bears. They don't have a lot of cap space, so they're going to have two first round picks. In addition, I think they have like another fourth or something like that. So you have all those firsts, and so in theory, if Daniel Jones is bad, it wouldn't be too hard to trade up and go and get a new young guy to replace him with. So I think there is pressure on him. And if he fails, then a lot of the people in this organization might be losing their jobs. I mean, you would think Dave Gettleman kind of banked everything on Daniel Jones panning out. And if he doesn't, then you'd think he'd be in trouble. Joe Judge would probably be safe, but you know, when you have a new GM, you know, who knows what he thinks about the coach that's already there. So, there's certainly a lot of pressure. I think he's pretty good about letting anything bother him, but that doesn't even matter if he's turning the ball over again. So if he stops turning the ball over and he doesn't even need to be a star. If he can just be, you know, a guy that just doesn't lose the game for you, then they could be pretty good.
What is the most Eli thing about Daniel Jones?
Most Eli, I mean, the way they look is just, they look exactly the same. And they're like emotional, they're like physical, and you know, facial reactions to things, like it's very similar. I think Eli had a little more personality, and you're especially seeing that now that he's retired. Mm-hmm. I know there was times where he's bland throughout his career. Eli's really like embraced social media and stuff, but I think he showed a little more personality. He was a little better in press conferences. Daniel like does everything he can to not say anything. I just think that's his personality. I don't know if he's a particularly like talkative, interesting guy away from the field, but it's like impossible not to see the similarities when you look at them.
Who's been your favorite Giant to cover thus far? Who's the most interesting favorite to talk to?
Giant
who do you love talking
covered.
To? Yeah, who do you love talking to?
That's a good question. So it's been tough because I'm in my second year on the Giants. So the entire time I've covered the Giants has actually been like via Zoom and doing stories like that. But I'll say, so last year I did a story on Leonard Williams, which I really enjoyed writing, and I talked to him. And so he has, you know, he's a unique dude. He had his best year of his career last year. And last offseason, he started doing deep sea spear fishing, where he like goes underwater and basically stabs fish. And that was like his way to get away. And you know, because he's a guy that's been criticized throughout his career, and he was a first round pick, and he wasn't living up to the hype for a long time. And he just like doesn't let anything bother him. And he kind of like went there to like clear his mind, and then he came back and had the year of his life. And he's a lot of times these guys like would rather not talk about all the football stuff. And once I started asking him about the fishing, he even like thanked me, like, thank you for talking to me about this stuff. He talked for a while about all the fishing and all that stuff. So I think he's one of my favorite guys. He's just like, just nothing bothers him. And he's kind of low key, and even just following him on Instagram, the dude is just having the time of his life. He goes on like safaris, he plays with exotic animals, he fishes, and I've enjoyed covering him for sure.
What is the most interesting thing you've gleaned from Dave Gettleman since you've been covering him?
That I've gleaned from him. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I mean he doesn't care what people think. Honestly, like
you don't think he cares. Like there's nothing about he's just I'm doing my own thing. It's real with him.
Oh yeah, I mean it's funny. I did before I was on the Giants beat, like a little before I like fully joined it. I did a like long story about him. So I like read something where he was a driver's ed teacher back in the day in high school. And so I like tracked down the high school. I went out there. I got a bunch of hilarious photos of him as a teacher back then. I talked to all these people who like absolutely love him and called him their hero. Like he was just an amazing person to all of them. And he's been the same way since then. Like he's just like a no nonsense. He says what he's thinking. That's the thing. Like, you know, a lot of times before the season, what'll happen is like the beat reporters will get like one-on-ones with the GM, you know, on background or whatever, and stuff. You don't really get much out of Dave because he says everything he's thinking in the press conference for the most part. So it's it's good or bad for the Giants. I think sometimes I'm sure they would like prefer that he just gave non-answers. So he just can't help himself but to show like his personality sometimes, which is good for us because like Joe Judge is very good at not showing emotion or personality whenever possible. And then you have Dave, who, you know, somebody, if you ask him a question enough times, he'll say some ridiculous answer. And, you know, I think early in his tenure at the Giants, it came across as cockiness a little too much, more than he deserved. Then as they started losing, that kind of went away. And then they had a good end of the year last year, and they had a big offseason. I think he's slowly getting back to that, where he feels pretty good about himself. And, you know, all the criticism he's been getting, he doesn't think it was deserved. But, I mean, if you look at the record, it clearly was. But, I mean, he's entertaining, to say the least. I'll say that much.
What are your expectations this summer? What is the plan? Like, how much is opening up? How much are you going to be able to start visiting with these guys? Like, how much do you think you'll be able to get back to normal this summer and this fall?
My impression is that the NFL is going to try and avoid doing the locker rooms this year. I hope that's not like a permanent thing. That's an important part of our job, I think. But I mean, the fun part is like fans will be back to games, which I really definitely missed last year. It was very strange being at empty stadiums and having the, you know, the sound pumped in. I'm going to be going to the road games again, which I didn't go to last year. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping, you know, I'm sure a lot of stuff will still be on Zoom, but I'm hoping, you know, at games or whatever, they do some in-person stuff where, I don't know, they pull a few guys aside and we interview them socially distanced or whatever, or maybe not because if we're vaccinated or something, I don't know, but I hope there's some sort of compromise. I think there will be. I think they're still negotiating that. It is kind of frustrating that I don't have any idea as we head into the summer, but
yeah,
hopefully by the time July comes around, we'll get a little bit closer to normal.
I worry about that for you guys and just all my reporter friends, and just the longer this goes, the more concerned I am that, it's going to be harder to get, these teams and these leagues to open back up to what it was. Cause they're just going to get conditioned to being pushed away and being closed off. I'm concerned.
Yeah. And I think, also part of it is they're not like, since they're not mandating vaccines, which I guess is their right.
Yeah.
That's also a way, like if a player is choosing not to be vaccinated, then I guess it would kind of be against protocol to have him near us. So yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how this works.
Last thing we'll wrap up here, Zach. When you look at the depth chart right now, including the incoming rookie class, we've gotten reports of Kadarius Toney's early struggles. But when you look at it, who do you think from this rookie class and who on the free agent market that they brought in do you estimate will have the biggest impact this fall for the Giants?
In terms of the rookies, I would start with Azeez Ojulari, who they got in the second round, edge rusher. I think they value him as a first rounder. I think they wouldn't consider him in the late first round. They wanted to get Tony. They really liked him. They traded back in the second round, and he was still there. I think there were some questions about his knee. I don't think the Giants believe they're actually an issue. He's almost immediately going to step in as a starter at outside linebacker, I would guess. They badly needed one there. So they kind of need him to make an impact. They need some pass rushers. So I'll put him at the top there. And then in terms of like the guys they brought in, I guess Kenny Galladay would be the obvious one. He's going to be the number one receiver right away. Him and Daniel Jones have really made an effort to like bond and all that good stuff. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And just kind of like a sneaky one I would add is Kyle Rudolph, who they signed. I think he fits the mold of like a tight end that Jason Garrett really likes. I think he's going to be a red zone weapon for Daniel. I think they're already hitting it off. He's a little banged up right now. He's had surgery, but he's a good blocker. Like I think he's going to play a pretty decent role.
There you go. There you go. What can we check out from you at NJ.com this week, Zach?
Yeah, you know, we're just wrapping up mini camp and kind of looking ahead to training camp a little bit. There's a lot of content right now. We're kind of hitting the summer break, you know, when mini camp hits, it's kind of like going to summer break in high school, and then everybody comes back at the end of July. So the stretch is a little slower, but I try to fill it in with some interesting content when I can.
All right. Well, keep up the great work, sir. Thank you so much for making the time. I greatly appreciate it, Zach. And you stay safe out there and enjoy the ride, because I think covering New York this fall will be a wild ride. But I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be fun. Zach, thank you so much. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, man.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.